It's Mail It In Friday.
I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Yeah, it's Mail It In Friday.
I just stare at my desk, but it looks like I'm working.
So what?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Shut up and drive.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
If you're wondering what you're listening to, this is Billy Ray Cyrus and his new hit single, Bring the Cup to Tennessee.
This is terrible.
Bring the Stanley Cup to Tennessee. This really is awful. And I guess it was written and recorded in one day to nobody's surprise. Has Billy Ray Cyrus done anything relevant in 20 years?
Well, he was an actor. He's been an actor. And quite a successful actor, I believe.
Quite a successful actor.
Movie expert here is just weighing
in. No. I think he was on... Was he not on like a regular TV show? Like, I don't know which one, but I'm going to Google it now as we speak. But
we're getting Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, something like that. Like,
I got his IMDb up right now.
Okay, what's he been on? Is an American singer song.
He was in Sharknado 2, if that's what you're talking about.
Doc was a show. Dancing with the Stars, Hannah Montana, Nashville Star. Yeah, what? It's been pretty thin.
Yeah, I don't see anything of substance here. Sorry, Noodles.
He's got actor on his bio.
So after this song catches on, he'll probably be right back.
Okay, but we should compare because that song, get the Achy Breaky Heart song, because that was an unreal song.
That's a very good song, but it's also kind of a, it's a catchy, cheesy country tune.
It's three chords, too.
I'll bet you again, like real country stars look at Billy Ray Cyrus and think this guy's a goon.
Who's made a lot of money from one song.
If you're Keith Urban, and looking at this guy.
Does the name Chris Moneymaker ring a bell to you? Remember that guy from that won the World Series of Poker?
Yes.
Yes.
And he won it because he got online and he won like a $35 tournament that got him into the tournament. And he just got on the biggest heater in poker history. This guy was winning hands that he had no right to win.
Right.
But then because of the moment when poker was exploding, he became this massive name. And people that didn't know any better were like, oh, Moneymaker's the best player in the world. And like Phil Ivey and Phil Hellmuth all these other great players were like, this guy's brutal. He just got lucky in one tournament. And I feel like Billy Ray Cyrus is the Chris Moneymaker of country music.
Well, probably because he plays three chords on the guitar, gets a hit song, and fades off into the sunset. Little acting, little that. But
I see what is developing here. This will be who's going to sing the national anthem tomorrow night.
If it's Billy Ray Cyrus, the Preds are losing 8-0.
But that's the point. Like, you're talking about Nashville is Music City, USA. All these country artists have got on board, and this is the guy.
He's the grandfather.
Who sings the Stanley Cup
song?
Couldn't you get someone better than that?
When you get scored on in Nashville, Tim McGraw has that song, I Like It, I Love It.
Right.
And I love the song, but I always hated getting scored on in Nashville. That was cool.
I want some more of it.
Yeah, that was cool. Like, Nashville's had this unreal atmosphere. This hasn't snuck up on anybody who's played and gone to games there. What it snuck up on is kind of the rest of the hockey world has started to pay attention. Like, oh, Nashville's a pretty good city to go to, and yeah, they got a pretty good atmosphere there. That rink has always been hopping.
Well, it's always been hopping, and they have bands in there that play in the intermissions that are big time bands.
Yeah.
I mean, really, really good music plays on the intermissions. There's a stage right at the one end. And it's kind of funny because now there were always stars there. They always came up. Now they're all coming out.
Right.
But that building was the first time you walked in, it was great.
I told Brian this yesterday. A lot of big bands go to Nashville to rehearse before they go out on tour. So I remember being at the rink. We practiced there because we were playing. We were flying on to Minnesota or somewhere on a road trip. The Judds were rehearsing. We went and watched them hanging out. Dixie Chicks were kicking around. Aerosmith. Like, all these bands are kind of just...
They've got an audience. They've got a venue.
Yeah, it's that hall that's joined to the rink.
Right.
So they set up the whole stage show. They run through their set list and stuff. And that's their rehearse, and it's really neat. I've always loved Nashville. I'm actually kind of sad and a little bit jealous
that everybody else found out about it.
Yeah, like everyone else has found out this city is amazing.
James texting and saying Billy Ray Cyrus is to country what Vanilla Ice was to rap.
Yes,
I think he's probably right about that. Someone else texting and asking if the song would have been better if Miley sang it instead of Billy Ray.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Miley's probably got more talent than her dad.
Yeah, she had a couple of issues along the way, I believe.
Yeah, she's gone down
a little bad luck,
a path that not many would necessarily advertise or suggest they should. But she's actually pretty talented. I mean, she's had some big hits. You talk about breaking through and not just being a country star. She's like a pop star.
Yeah,
right.
She's a big name.
That's where the money is.
She is a big name.
But I'm curious to see what the atmosphere will be like tomorrow night. I can only assume that the building will be hopping. The ticket prices are through the roof.
Are they?
But I don't think it's going to factor in. I think this will become a story. It already is a story. How much will the crowd boost the level of play from Nashville? But as I've been saying all week, I don't think Pittsburgh will be affected by that. Let's head down there now, catch up with Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. Do you feel like Pittsburgh will be affected at all by the crowd and how loud they're going to be tomorrow night?
Only if Nashville scores early. And, it doesn't matter how experienced you are. The game can get away from you for a 5 or 7 minute segment. And if you give up 2 or 3 quick ones because you get rattled, sure it can matter. But, I mean, the crowd can't stop the puck. The crowd can't score a goal. I think the guys are, I talked to a few Nashville guys today. I mean, they're really excited to play, and they're super, super excited because they know what it's going to be like. It's going to be loud. It'll be the loudest building we've been in all year. It won't even be close. And I think it can matter in that regard. But it's, as far as changing the course of the series, I don't think so. But it will be fun. I'll tell you, you can't even believe the activity down around that rink. So we're doing our panel hits from, you know, from the top of Tootsie's there. It stares back at the rink. Well, you can't see the rink now because there's a gigantic stage that they built for the Alan Jackson concert tomorrow. So there's an Alan Jackson concert. There's going to be 30,000 people outside watching the game on the outside viewing area, and 17,000 inside. It's going to be bedlam tomorrow. It's really it's an amazing area. It's an amazing scene, actually, here.
Well, I can only imagine. I mean, it's their first time, right? Like, they should be embracing it. And all this talk about how it's an unconventional hockey market, that's fine and all, but they're not going to treat it like that's the case. I mean, and I wonder if that ignorance, the fact that they've never been there before, may actually factor into them just being loud and crazy the whole game, regardless of what happens. Like, we talked about this yesterday, and I thought about it more afterwards. My initial thought was, if Pittsburgh scores early, that place will go quiet quickly because the team is down 2-0,
right,
and the nervous energy. But because these are not like fans you see in Toronto who think the game differently, who maybe came up, were raised with the game, played the game, like, this crowd is going to party, I think, tomorrow night. I'm not sure what Pittsburgh does is really going to factor into how the fans react tomorrow night.
Well, the only way it could is if they start at 3 in the afternoon and they get behind 3-0, they might run out of steam because they're just tired.
Good point.
Like today, honestly, we went in to do our hits today at about 2 o'clock, so we climb up through the stairs at Tootsie's, and so, you know, there's people everywhere. We get up to the top level, 2 o'clock. It is jammed. Like, I can't. We were laughing. We're like, this place, you can't even go 5 feet in this place. Like, it was packed. And there's 3 different bands playing all over the place in there. And you get out on the patio, and it's jammed. It's like the whole place is on fire. I know we talk about Nashville being a really cool place. I've never seen it like this. And the fact that it's the week of that Country Music Awards, and they got these stage for back-to-back concerts to Alan Jackson. I didn't hear who's on the next day, but or for Game 4, but it is, I don't think much can take away from the energy here. I guess to agree to your point, Brian. I don't think there's really much that is going to make the people lose their spirit. Now, if the Predators come out, I think this is the one thing they have to guard against. Is you can just imagine how excited these guys are. If they start running all over the place and Pittsburgh strings together three passes and scores, then maybe they get a little cautious. And if they get cautious, I don't think that plays into the way they want to play. They've got to be responsible. They've got to be energetic. But they've got to play in the context of what their system is. And if they get running around, they might get shredded apart.
I agree. And all the focus has been on Pekka Rinne, but you know, I'm looking at Forsberg, I'm looking at Arvidsson, I'm looking at James Neal, and those guys have come up real short as far as being impact players. They've generated a couple chances. Now, Murray's made a couple good saves, but do you see anything out of them? Do you just, is it flat out you just need more out of those guys if Nashville's going to have success?
Yeah, I don't think there's any great strategy to it. The one thing I would say, though, for those guys, they have had some chances, and Peter Laviolette kind of alluded to it today, that they've had chances, but they want better chances. And to me, what that means is they need to get inside the defense. Too much of their stuff is from the outside. I can remember the Neal crossbar and one really good wrister in Game 1. In Game 2, Forsberg had a 2-on-1 that Murray caught. Made a really, really nice save.
Yep.
And Arvidsson's buzzed around a little bit and had a couple chances, but nothing where he's fishing around the front of the net, where for a little guy is where he scored a lot of his goals this year. So to me, too many of the chances are kind of on the periphery of the defense. They've got to get inside those guys. They've got to fight a little harder to get in, control the puck a little more off the cycle, get inside, get to the front of the net. And if they do that, I think they'll be able to give themselves a better chance to score. Because right now, it seems like whatever comes from the outside, Murray's going to handle. He looks really, really good.
To your point, Ray, I continue to be surprised by how Pittsburgh's defense has held up through this. And I thought when they were at their worst is when Ottawa gave them time to make plays, and then they couldn't make plays. But when they've just actually taken the puck and fired it up off the boards and let their forwards go get it, they've been pretty good, and that's why they've been so hard to forecheck. But I keep waiting for them to break down.
Oh, I look at that defense, and I'm like, I don't know how anybody can look at it, or anybody would, and go, yes, that looks like a Stanley Cup-winning defense. None of them, outside of Justin Schultz, who I think they do a really good job of shielding from any real threats offensively. Like they guard him pretty well. He's the only guy that really is a passer. The other five guys, they get it and they treat it like a grenade and they just pitch it out to center ice most of the time. And so where they're in trouble is if they have to go back and make a decision with the puck, that's the problem spot. But they haven't had to do that enough. Or when they do, they've made a few mistakes that Nashville hasn't taken and turned into something. Nashville, to me, has played outside of 5 or 7 minutes in the first game, in the first period, and the first 5 minutes of the third period. So outside of those 10 to 12 minutes, they've been the better team for 100 minutes, and they got nothing to show for it. Can they turn that into something? Well, I guess that's really what the series will swing on in Game 3.
Well, exactly, and I'm sure that is what Laviolette is trying to spin, and that's what he's trying to tell his team, and I'm sure they're trying to find that confidence, as they should, but the reality is they're down 2-0, and if they don't win tomorrow night, mail in the rest of the series. You're not gonna storm back on this team and win four straight against Pitt. We had a conversation earlier in the afternoon about the Conn Smythe and how it sets up, and I mentioned that Jake Guentzel, for me, was a dark horse, and I think he's got to be put in the running, you know, top two or three. The guy's got 12 goals as a rookie with at least two more games, maybe more than that, and an opportunity to chase down a record in terms of goals for rookies. Pooley and Noodles both pointed to Malkin. I thought Crosby had a real opportunity and maybe was in the driver's seat coming into this series, but I don't think he's done much the first two games, which is amazing because they're up 2-0. But where's your head at, specifically looking at Pitt, when it comes to where the Conn Smythe is at right now?
I'd go Malkin, Gensel, Crosby. Crosby was outstanding in that first stage of game one, and then like everybody else, I don't know, they all just kind of went away, and then Gensel scored late and they won. But I would say start to finish, Malkin's been the most consistent guy here in the finals. He's got, even though he was quiet in game one, he's got two goals. He's leading the playoffs in points. I would pick him first. I don't have a vote for the Conn Smythe, but he would be my first choice. And but if Gensel scores three goals over the next couple of games and they win the series in five, for example, he might be hard to look past.
Ray, has there been any talk about Rinne and fatigue, either mentally or physically, and how this extra day might be a factor in that? You look at the other end, and I mean, Murray's only had to play six games so far.
Well, what a luxury, eh? That the way it worked out, that he hasn't had to run the ball the whole time. I mean, what a luxury to have
huge
Murray
advantage.
Play so well. Yeah, now he's fresh and healthy, and you know, I don't know. No, there hasn't been much talk about whether Rinne's worn down. I know people are saying that he's given up three goals in five of his last seven starts, but in the Anaheim series, the three goals almost to me weren't relevant because of the workload that he had and the fact that the one was a game five or six that you know, Nashville got six goals.
Right.
But he's more than held his own. I don't know how fatigue can't be an issue. I do think he'll be much sharper at home. But what's interesting is he doesn't ever beat Pittsburgh. And I wonder if that's as much a factor as anything else. Pooley, I don't know if you had a team or two that you didn't really produce much against. You don't know why, you just didn't. For me, it was Buffalo. I would go in there and think, I never score against these guys. I don't get it.
And you were Noodles thinking that going in.
Sure,
yeah.
There were, pardon me,
you were thinking that going in.
Yes, before you even start. For a goalie, I would think it's even more of a, you know, something in your head space. I don't know what your team was, but everybody seems to have one. Unfortunately for Rinne, it's the one he sees every night right now.
Well, I mean, he's another guy that came up in our Conn Smythe conversation where he was the lock for Nash, but he's almost played his way out of it. But, you know, I said if they actually end up winning the Cup, he's still going to win the Conn Smythe because that means he turned his game around.
I totally agree. If they win, yeah, Rinne will get the Conn Smythe. I don't see anybody that could make a bigger impact than he's going to have to do if they win.
Yep, I agree. That's the one thing. I mean, I've been talking about, and it's interesting because he's allowed eight goals in two games. Ninth was an empty netter. He's had two go off of his own players. So now you're talking about six goals. The Sheary goal was a backdoor goal that he had no chance on. That was a great play by Kunitz. So you're really talking about five goals in two games. One game was a weird game where he didn't see shot for 37 minutes. And then the 3 or 4 minute span in the third period last game where he allows three. And it's been a really unique two games for Pekka Rinne. So that's why I did something today talking about, yeah, you can, the narrative is he's had the worst save percentage in modern, what is it, modern day in the finals or something like that. Is it? I think,
yeah,
Duthie threw, that was his throw. But to me, there's just more to it. If you dig a little bit deeper into the goals against and stuff, he needs to be better. That's the bottom line is he needs to make a save. I thought the Malkin goal last game, it was a great shot by Malkin, but he was in motion, and you need a save. I know it was 2-on-1, but you need to stop the bleeding and instill that confidence in the group, and he just didn't at that time. And I think Lavi was like, okay, I got to get him out of there because there's a lot of bleeding here. We've got to jolt something. But going into next game, there's so much pressure on him. I'm actually worried for him on that first. What if Pittsburgh scores a backdoor goal that he has no chance on? People are going to be like, here we go with this ring.
Well, do you think they'd boom? Like, who knows what these fans are going to do?
No, I don't think that. I really don't think that.
I don't know, man. I'd fire up a boom.
Well, he's, Hayes, that's got more chance of happening in your beloved Toronto.
Yeah.
Oh, I would fire off a boo in a heartbeat. I almost booed Freddie Anderson in Game 6 when I was in the building. He was on fire.
Like, here, they're going to I don't think that's even a factor.
Well, they're stupid fans down there.
Naive.
Let's use the word
naive. No.
They don't get it. They don't get it, right? They should be booing. Come on, spark up some controversy
down
there.
That's like saying Toronto baseball fans are stupid because they're in Canada.
No.
And what do they know about baseball?
That's silly. Come on,
Ray. Well, just silly what you just said.
What, are you from Nashville now? You're Billy Ray Cyrus?
No, by the way, he just goes with Cyrus now. He wants to go with one name.
Oh, he's not Billy Ray anymore.
Have you heard the song yet, Ray? The Stanley Cup Billy Ray?
No, I saw it, and I'm like, I don't know what it sounds like, but I'm sure it sucks. So I didn't listen to it.
Awful. That's probably the best decision you've made in a long time. Give this a listen. Stanley Cup to Tennessee. Got me world of fans like. All right, that's enough.
I think he has Bobby. He's got Bobby Mack singing in the background.
I thought that was Ray.
Sounds like karaoke.
Well, seriously. Like, seriously.
Yeah, that's awful.
He went and produced that somewhere, in his basement? That's terrible.
Well, as we pointed out, to no one's surprise, apparently that was written and produced in one day. So he didn't put much time into it, not much thought, not much production. The beauty of that is if a band started playing that at Tootsie's or on the Strip, they'd get kicked out of Nashville.
Standing O.
No, they'd get kicked out. They'd be like, you gotta go. You're not playing this, man. This is Music City USA we're talking about here.
The fans there. Did you make sure everyone made it home for curfew last night from Tootsie's?
Yeah, there was a couple of stragglers. There was so this scenario played itself out. One of the guys said to the other, "Do not leave without me." And of course, he was assured that wouldn't happen.
Yes.
But somehow everybody got separated, and the one guy was there by himself and couldn't quite find the hotel on the way back. So apparently a 10-minute walk was like 40 minutes, and it was a little bit after midnight. So
poor Puffy.
There were some issues. There were some issues. I do have to say this, though. We often make fun of James because directionally James is... He's a moron. He really is. He cannot find anything. He left the hotel today. Noodles, where you know where we are. You walk straight down the hill. He went the wrong direction.
There's one street.
But we said, James, when you were going uphill, did you not notice that the rink is downhill?
Wow.
He's like, yeah, I wasn't thinking.
Wow.
Details.
Well, just know where the bars are. That's all that matters. Be at the rink on time.
We're sitting there. He goes, I don't even know why I'm going to tell you guys this, but I went the wrong way out of the hotel today. We're like, man, we're just coming down here to tape our hits. Like, what are you doing? It's an issue for the young man.
That's how he
brilliant
rolls.
Brilliant host.
That's the leader down there.
Oh, he's our leader. He can't find the bathroom from his kitchen. Like, staggering.
Well, look after him for us and try to survive down there, and we'll catch up again on Monday.
As fun as last night was, I think this weekend has grand potential.
I would pay a lot of money to be down there. I'm actually so jealous. It sounds like it's so much fun.
Like, I'm so rattled that little Jonas is down there not enjoying himself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's no way you saw Jonas Siegel once.
No, did not see him.
No.
I'm at the ball game the other night.
So is there any chance you've seen O? Because he mailed it in today and...
Oh, on a Friday is Cliff Clavin like you read about.
Yeah, but is he Cliff Clavin in Nashville right now?
No, we've not seen him. I've not seen him, although he would be sweating here like you read about.
He would be so uncomfortable like sitting in a suit trying to do a hit and it's 1,000 degrees out. Like, what type of language would he be throwing at the producer?
Can we get going? I gotta say, I did give it to Mike Lane today, who does an amazing job as our producer. He wanted to wait. He and Parker, our camera guy, they wanted to wait for a cloud to cover the sun. And I'm like, are you kidding me? We're out here sweating There's gravy like you read about. Let's get that camera moving.
And you're waiting for the cloud to blow through.
We're right. waiting for. We're like, stop it. I'm like, they go, it'll look better. I don't care.
No.
Let's move it along.
You're not down there trying to win Emmys.
We
you're
saw it. It looks great.
Yeah,
it great.
It looks fine. Well,
I'll
it looks
Parker.
Hot.
I'll tell Parker it looks fine.
All right, buddy. Enjoy it down there.
Later on.
There's Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst. You want to talk about uncomfortable. The O-Dog in Florida in late June. Remember we were down there for the draft 2 years ago?
Oh, yeah.
And we were sitting at that bar you love, the Elbow Room?
Yeah.
I looked over at him at one point. I thought he was actually melting into a puddle.
He didn't have a suit on in the Elbow Room. They wouldn't allow
so
that. Would
no, he was so hot.
We all were dying. Like, oh, it was
everybody
so hot.
Was. Everybody
but, like,
was.
This guy
Have
was
you ever seen, I think it's the first X-Men, when the guy actually just turns into a puddle?
Melts.
Yeah, he just melts. Like, and his veins are popping. That was the O-Dog. I honestly thought this guy was just going to combust.
What was the name of that gritty bar that we went to by the hotel? Not the Elbow Room.
That's
that other one
gritty.
Where we had some, like... Do you remember that?
It, yeah, right by the I'd hotel. Have to look it up. I took a picture
terrified.
Of it.
I was terrified. I told Steph, I'm like, we're not going in here. We're going to get shot.
It was like a biker bar, and it was actually totally unsafe.
Like dangerous. It was like a dangerous bar. Right
I got chirped. Door. Like I walked in there, and there was some guy who was definitely a convict.
Yeah.
And he said something to me, and I was like, okay.
Yeah, let's keep moving on
cool,
here.
Good
Nothing
for you.
To see here.
Yeah, I'm looking at
and
it
like,
right now.
And like, always oblivious, bellied up to the bar, like...
Jesters.
Is Element. That what it was called? Jesters.
Jesters, open till 4 a.m., and it was on like a highway in the middle of nowhere.
It was like, how did you pull that up?
Because I had posted a picture on Twitter, so I went back to look for it.
Jesters.
Yeah.
That Jesters. Was a dangerous bar. Like, I guarantee you there's a rap sheet coming out of that bar. Like, there's been stabbings or muggings or anything like that at Jesters.
I'm telling
the Elbow
you.
Room's a Taj Mahal compared to that.
It is. That's... But the Elbow Room is quite friendly. I've only had one incident there back when I was playing. That was... It wasn't my fault. It was a Monday night, and the bouncer started being a hero, and one of our tough guys said...
Wrong guy to...
Yeah. Yeah. Like said,
everyone relax
put an
here.
End, yeah, we're
going
to put an
now.
End to this right now. And everyone calmed down at that point, and we went back to drinking and having a good time.
Future headlines in about an hour. Pierre LeBrun was down there at the scouting combine in Buffalo, and that continues, I believe, this weekend. And he caught up with all the GMs, including the GMs in New Jersey, Philly, and Dallas. And...
Great set of interviews.
Yeah, and they really all kind of said, listen, we've been fielding calls and maybe something could happen here. I don't think it's a great endorsement for the draft in its depth because people, I think, understand it's just not a very good draft at the top of the draft. Anyway, there's no McDavid and Eichel. There's no Matthews and Line A.
There's not supposed to be. They're called generational. I was getting concerned that we had two in a row, but they proved to be right.
But here's the thing, though. Is there even like a Marner? Like Mitch Marner, is he not a lock first overall pick in this draft? Considering what he was a junior?
Yeah, you don't know that at the time, though. You really don't. You do at the end of his junior career.
He was pretty damn good his draft year. I mean, McDavid and Eichel were so separate, but they're like...
Yeah, and yet Dylan Strom was taken ahead.
And Strom went third. And Strom may end up having a great career and being better than him, but Marner had like 127 points or something as a 17, 18-year-old. Anyway, just the idea of trades, I think that would be great for business. I'm always a proponent of more movement, make the draft more interesting. We haven't seen it in years.
Well, you would hope that they would look at a team like Nashville that's made major, major trades. Like a number of major trades.
Yeah.
You know, the quieter ones, Hornquist for Neal.
Yeah.
But it's let guys go and really made an effort to trade and make hockey trades.
Well, nobody even talks about Radulov screwing them twice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just
Well, wait
going.
A second. Ryan Suter.
Ryan Suter just walks. Like
didn't get anything in
nothing
return.
Nothing for him.
Well, and here's another thing to consider. Outside of Jersey, who I don't think is very good, and I don't think they're going to be very good anytime soon, Philly and Dallas moved way up. Like, Dallas hired Hitchcock for a reason. They want to win and win right now. Philly's got a legitimate shot of being a playoff team, I think, next year. Really
they
good
need,
young defense, Corey.
They
I know
need
you need, a, they need a goalie, I get it, but there's a lot of teams that need a goalie.
Yeah.
There were teams that needed goalies that still made the playoffs
this year.
Right,
you're right.
And the point I'm making is Philly and Dallas, I think, could convince themselves they could be a playoff team this year.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they try to utilize the second and third pick to help them win now and improve now, especially if they look at it and say, I'm not even sure what these players are going to be.
Let's not forget that Tampa, I'm sure, thinks they're going to get back to the playoffs and be right there. Like, you know, they
Florida's going to be thinking the exact same thing. Yeah. And Carolina, guess what? Think that they're coming.
Yeah, there's four or five teams that think they're a playoff team next year. Like
that weren't.
Tampa, Florida, Carolina.
Where's Buffalo?
Buffalo, they're probably, I think Buffalo thinks that they're trending in the Toronto plane of path, of yeah. like path. Yeah. So maybe not. But like, you know, the Leafs think they're going to be back there. Mm-hmm. Like there's I think the East is going to be unreal next
Could be
year.
Fun.
I think it'll be a lot of fun.
We got someone tweeting in who is from South Florida.
Yes.
Said Jester's is located only a few miles from Wagon Wheel Road, known as the best place in the USA to dump a body.
Really?
So that's very comforting.
You probably would have been dumped.
Oh, dude, you would have never found me either. I would have been yapping the whole way. Guy's like, all right, I'm going to pull out two shovels for you. Exactly. You slob. You're
for
so
going
annoying.
To Wagon Wheel Road, Hayes.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds like fun. I love that song, Wagon Wheel. He's like, you're not going to love this one. Scotty Mack would join us. Russell Martin not playing tonight. So Francisco Liriano, already a debate whether or not he's going to have it in him tonight, considering the way he's been pitching all year. He's coming off an injury, and he's facing the Yankees. The Yankees are red hot, and they can slug. Now he doesn't have Martin behind the plate. How is this going to affect Liriano's leash tonight? Scotty Mack will tee up the game next. Don't tell my heart, my heart-breaking heart. I just don't think he'd understand. And if you tell my heart, my heart-breaking heart, he might blow up. All right, we'll catch up with James Duffy as well later in the afternoon. Future headlines in about an hour. Game one of the NBA Finals didn't necessarily meet expectations. It was a fun first quarter, active first quarter, but then Golden State just took off, and Kevin Durant and Steph Curry just put on an absolute clinic in the second quarter. Throughout the second half, they end up winning by 22. I feel pretty good about Golden State in five. I don't want that to be the case. It's only one game. I'm not going to write LeBron and the Cavs off. LeBron is 1-7 in his career in game ones of the NBA Finals.
Right.
1-7, which means he bounces back. And I would bank on a much better effort from the Cleveland Cavaliers come Sunday night. As for the Jays-Yankees game, it was also horrible last night. Marco Estrada gave up four in the first, another in the gave up another in the second. They were down 5-0 before he could even flinch. Before I got home, it was 5-0.
I know.
And Gary Sanchez decided it would be his night. He had two big home runs last night. Yankees are on fire. They're a good team.
You've got to win a couple games in this series. You have to win two.
You got to win two. Yeah, if you're the Jays, you got to split.
And you're five games out. You're still fine.
Just keep plugging away. If you can split it, you'll be okay. Scotty Mack joining us now. And the bigger news, really, for the Jays is that Russell Martin will not be playing tonight. How do you think that will affect the leash that will be on Francisco Liriano?
Yeah, it's too bad, guys, right? Because, I mean, this is a big series, as you guys were just talking about. And I know they sat Devin Travis last night to give him a breather. And now it's Russell Martin. You got to take extra care of this because it was a problem earlier on in the season and you don't want it becoming a longer-term thing. I don't. The only way it affects the leash is if this guy's an absolute gas can. And I was saying on my show earlier on today, guys, I don't even, whatever it is that happens tonight, I don't even know how to assess it. Because if he is wild and spraying everything left, right, up, and down, well, that could just be as much about the fact that that's what Liriano does sometimes as it is the fact that he's a little rusty coming off from injury and doesn't have a lot of minor league rehab innings underneath his belt. If he's spot on tonight, that could also be because that's what Francisco Liriano does. So I think he's probably in the 75 or so pitch limit. Whether it takes him an inning and a third to get there, or which Blue Jays fans would prefer, four or five innings to get there, that remains to be seen. But it is pretty clear that, you know, he is far more comfortable pitching to Russell Martin than he is anybody else. The one thing I will say is that Luke Maley is a much better defensive catcher and pitch framer than Jared Saltalamacchia was. And Saltalamacchia was behind the plate for that disastrous first start in Tampa Bay in April that Liriano had. So maybe Maley can settle him down. But I wouldn't be surprised if he misses Martin. You just have to hope he steps up.
Well, the injury and the stint on the DL actually may have been a saving grace for Liriano, because it allowed people to kind of forget about how he was pitching. He had been awful. And I think he was on the verge of potentially having start skipped or potentially being, demoted or DFA'd or whatever, because this guy, they picked him up last year. He pitched way better than I thought he was going to pitch. He really pitched well when they got him from Pittsburgh, and I think a big part of that was Russell Martin. And now he's going to be in the rotation because they're paying him and because Sanchez is still hurt. But Sanchez, the update came out today that his blister's doing a lot better, and maybe he is going to be returning quicker than people thought. I have to believe, Scotty, that Liriano's, he's going to be pitching for his life here real soon. Don't you agree with that?
You know, I think that's a fair thought. I mean, the one thing I would say about Sanchez is sooner doesn't necessarily mean like next week, because
right.
one of the things that happened with him this time is they said, all right, you can't put a baseball in your hand. This finger's got to get better. So he's got to get on a throwing program, and you'll go from 60 to 90 to 120 feet. Then you'll get onto a bullpen mound. Then you probably do that a couple times and then go down to a Buffalo or wherever for a minor league rehab start. Like, it could still be a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, be a genie. If he keeps throwing pretty well and the rest of the bullpen keeps doing its thing, whether it's Tapera or Barnes or Smith, you may reach a point where you prefer Biagini to Liriano. I could see them maybe even going a couple times through the rotation when Sanchez is back with a six-man rotation, just to give guys extra days of rest, particularly the younger pitchers like Stroman and whatnot, just ease the workload in the middle of the season, kind of getting into the dog days. But yeah, eventually a decision will have to come up. And, you know, there's all this talk about, well, Liriano can be kind of a hybrid guy for you because he's been that way in the past. You can throw him down in the bullpen. I didn't think he was any good at all last year when he was coming out of the bullpen. And he's one of those guys, as a field-type pitcher, if his stuff's going all over the place, he can get into a lot of trouble really, really quickly. And so I don't know if you can count on him in that role. But let's just let this stuff play out, because the one thing, Brian, and you know this, it's really true across any sport, but especially in baseball, it's a long slog, and we can predict what may happen when Sanchez comes back. But who knows? Maybe by the time Sanchez comes back, somebody else has gotten hurt. So, I mean, anything could happen here, and we'll just have to wait and see how it all plays out.
Or, for that matter, Liriano actually catches a heater here and starts rolling again, you know, or starts feeling like a more competent option for them.
He's certainly capable of it.
Yeah.
There's no question about that.
With Scotty Mac, Jays, Yankees tonight. The Yankees put on a clinic last night. They got all over Marco Estrada early and often, ended up winning 12-2, and it was the Gary Sanchez show last night. But a lot more focus on Aaron Judge this year because Sanchez has been injured at times. Aaron Hicks, I mean, he's got an OPS, I think, up around 1,000 himself. And I was listening to you guys yesterday on your roundtable with Israel and Scott Mitchell about how you were saying the Yankees, I mean, they're already there. The way they're playing, they're already a formidable foe and an option to actually win the division or be a playoff team. But everyone's got 2018 circled, thinking they're going to potentially sign Harper, maybe Machado, maybe both, if not other options are out there. I mean, I'm with you on that. It kind of feels like the Yankees are on the way to being that powerhouse team that could dominate for many, many years. Do you get the impression, or do you feel like Atkins and Shapiro would be thinking the same thing? And if so, how might that affect what they do with this Jays team over the next year or two?
Yeah, well, I think that's a good question. I don't think you ever make decisions based off of what you think you see another team doing or what you anticipate another team doing down the road. But it's very clear, right, with the way that they constructed this team now, that they do want to continue to try and challenge for division titles or at least playoff spots with this group of guys. And that this window with the Bautistas will close relatively soon. Maybe it extends into next year. I mean, a guy like Kendrys Morales is on a three-year deal. Josh Donaldson is controllable through the end of next season, although if you're going to maximize value in dealing a guy like that, it's going to have to come sooner than next year's trade deadline, in my opinion. So that is a major decision you have to make, whatever direction you decide to go with it. but they've got some kids who project to be very, very good baseball players coming up. Probably, if I'm being generous, 2019, you'll start to see some of them. You might see Rowdy Tellez next year, in fact. But beyond that, most of them in 2019 to 2020, and that's the next wave. The problem is you got a Yankees team right now who are full of young kids. There's people you haven't even necessarily heard of who haven't arrived yet. They got a kid named Gleyber Torres in a deal with the Chicago Cubs last July, the Chapman deal. He's a shortstop, projects to be a future star for them. They could make Bryce Harper the first $500 million player in the sport's history in free agency in a year and a half. And that could make them, you know, Aaron Judge could move to left field. He could move somewhere else as a result of that. I mean, they could be a dynamite here within the next couple of years. But if you're the Jays, you try to contend with what you have now. If that doesn't work out, you pivot and maybe begin to offset or divest yourself of some of your assets to expedite the build. And then you hope that the Vlad Guerrero Jr.'s and the Bo Bichette's and the Sean Reed Foley's and some of these other guys come up in a couple of years, 3 years from now, and become contributors right away.
Thank you, Scotty. Enjoy the weekend, buddy. We'll catch you Monday at 1 p.m.
Look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
There's Scott MacArthur from the Scott MacArthur Show, 1 to 4, Monday through Friday, conveniently located right here at TSN 1050.
Although he was remote today.
He was.
Because he had quite a list, an esteemed list of guests.
Is that right?
Quite.
Wait. Were you one of them?
I was not. Okay. I wouldn't be in esteem.
Didn't make the cut?
No.
Well, I'll tell you what, this Yankee team, forget 2 years down the road, they're pretty impressive right now. Like, can you imagine, though, if Aaron Judge continues at this pace, Gary right. Sanchez, Aaron Hicks, and then they add Bryce Harper? Like, I like how Scotty just drops that as if it's nothing. The first $500 million player.
$500 million.
Imagine signing a $500 million contract.
That's a lot.
How could you possibly live up to that? Like, even if you're still a great player that goes out there and performs really well, Bryce Harper is the man.
Yeah.
But
look at the group
million.
You'd be going in with, though. Like, you injecting him into that lineup that you're watching right now, and that lineup's young.
Right.
And think about injecting him into that. They've done an amazing job of draft and develop. They really have. I mean, they don't just buy players.
It's crazy.
Well, they made some big trades the past couple of years knowing that they weren't good enough. So, okay, let's kind of.
Yeah, they weren't good enough,
fly.
But they're sort of there.
Yeah.
You know, they're one of those teams that can be sort of there.
Well, they went on a big run last year, didn't they, near the end of the year?
Near the end of the year, they got better. They didn't
After
make
they
the playoffs.
Moved a couple of guys.
Yeah, they got young. And that's when Judge came up, Sanchez came up, these kids came up, and then it was like, oh, they got the potential
Brian
to be really
Cashman
good.
Quietly has lasted a long, long time there.
He's been there, what, 15 years, 20
At
years?
Least.
Yeah.
Through all kinds of changes and
done a pretty good job.
Done a phenomenal
Why
job.
Change a good thing? James Duthie will join us. Future headlines in about 45 minutes. We haven't touched on the spelling bee last night that stole the night. Jay's game in the NBA game was so bad, I was all over the spelling
everyone
bee.
Everyone was.
It was quite the outing.
Do we get the sound on Jeff Van Gundy, too? Of him just fawning all over Rihanna?
I don't think we do have that.
We
okay,
have that?
Why don't
That's
we come
good.
Back and we'll
it's
get to
good.
That? Rihanna kind of stole the show.
Yeah.
She was bowing down to LeBron, chirping Kevin Durant.
Tell me she's not beautiful.
Warrior fans.
Yeah, he's like, it was a bit like...
Like borderline offside?
Well, I mean, he
creepy
was,
guy?
I think he was respectful, but it was just like he was like... Pretty mesmerized.
Was it like Brent Musburger?
with that guy from college's girlfriend?
Yeah, with A.J. McCarron's girlfriend.
Yeah, we should compare the two.
All right, let's get the Musburger and we'll get the Van Gundy. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. This hour, Mail-In and Friday, has been brought to you by Old Tomorrow Craft Beer and its brand new beer, Lighter Up, a flavorful light lager that's crisp, clean, and crushable. Lighter Up. Now available at select Copa groceries and beer stores. Don't forget, O-Dog Noodles and I are gearing up for the Scotiabank Road Hockey to Conquer Cancer Tournament September 23rd at Woodbine. Visit tsn1050.ca to make a donation on behalf of Team Overdrive. For every $20, you'll be entered to win roster spots on the team for you and a friend. All proceeds go to the Princess Margaret Cancer Center. James Duthie will join us live from Nashville, Tennessee. Look ahead to Game 3, get you an update on what's going on down there. A lot of people trolling about how amazing it is. Stop with the updates. We don't need to hear it. future headlines, and we'll look back on Game 1 of the NBA Finals and keep teeing up Game 2, Jays-Yankees tonight, and we'll hear the Van Gundy audio and compare it to the Musburger audio. Believe me, you don't want to miss that. We'll kick off the hour with that next.